Welcome to the Camden Nazarene Podcast. Camden Nazarene is an established church with a fresh vision located at 2276 Jefferson Davis Highway in Camden, South Carolina. We gather for worship each Sunday at 10:40 a.m., and you're invited to be our guest this Sunday.
You are worshiping with us. Just what a strong sense of the Holy Spirit thus far. Folks at the altar during worship time, I was sitting there, we were singing the worship songs, and I started talking to myself like, hey, you know, there's a really strong sense of spirit. Don't mess it up when you start preaching, we're excited that you're here. We're beginning a new series today called Elisha, A Tale of Ridiculous Faith. So, you know, a few weeks ago, we were actually in another series called What Would Jesus Undo? And one of those messages or teachings, we talked about the importance of having a bold faith. We talked about that sometimes we can get into a rut of spiritual indifference. We can get into a rut where with our spiritual life, we just kind of say, oh, you know, what's the big deal? You know, I'm living for the Lord. You know, I'll just do the best I can, you know, whatever. And we talked about in order to get out of that rut of spiritual indifference, that one of the things that we needed to do was to do things that took faith, to choose every day to do things that required you to have a bold faith, to make decisions and to do things that you would look back and say, wow, only God was able to lead me in that direction. So with that in mind, we come to this series, this entire 4 weeks that's going to be dedicated to what does it look like, not to just have a bold faith, but what would it look like to have a ridiculous faith? And so we're going to be looking at the Old Testament prophet Elisha, not Elijah, but Elisha. And you know, when you see that word ridiculous, you know, you're thinking, well, that's kind of I haven't heard that word used as part of a sermon, or you know what. And it got me thinking, you know, ridiculous is one of those words that has like a double meaning. You guys know, depending on what generation that you're a part of, you know about those words that mean one thing, but pop culture has turned them and they're used kind of to convey the opposite message. So when I was growing up, it was the word bad. So bad is not good, right? Or, you know, we hear that a lot. You know, our president, he'll say that a lot. He said, that's bad. That's bad. You know, that's kind of his favorite word he uses. And so bad usually has this negative connotation. But I grew up, if something was bad, it was really good. You know, a friend of mine got a new car for graduation, a new Pontiac Trans Am. He pulled into the high school parking lot, and we're all like, man, that's a bad car. And, you know, word bad means, you know, it's negative, right? No. In that context, bad means, man, that's bad to the bone, right? Now, the kids these days, so that's like an old guy. I'm talking about the kids these days. You know, the word is like sick. Oh, that's sick. And I'm like, you got the flu? Are you okay? You know, no. I'm talking about that's, if something's really sick, then they're saying that it's really cool. Yeah, it's really, really awesome. And the word, The word ridiculous is kind of the same way. I mean, you think of the word ridiculous as to mean something outlandish in a bad way, but now people understand ridiculous as outlandish in a good way. So like yesterday, we had barbecue. And so I ate it and I said, man, this barbecue is ridiculous. This is really good stuff. Not ridiculous in a bad way, but this stuff is just awesome. Off the chain. Yes. Why didn't I think of that? I was, the other day, Avery said something, and he was trying to convey the message that something was awesome. And he goes, man, that's the bomb. And I said, the bomb? He goes, yeah, Dad, the bomb means like it's cool. I said, hold on. I know what it means. My generation invented, that's the bomb. All right. In fact, then when the internet came along, it was, that's the bomb.com. All right, so I don't need a six-year-old to tell me what the bomb means, all right? I had to remind him of that. But the word ridiculous is one of those words that can have a different meaning. And this was Elisha. man, Elisha, his whole story is the story of this ridiculous faith. So let me give you a little backstory on Elisha. Sometimes we get him confused with his predecessor, Elijah. Now, Elijah, I mean, he was a major prophet for Israel. And he was, I mean, Elijah, man, he was known for being bold, for being daring, being full of faith. I mean, he was the one who would show up and call down, you know, fire from heaven and make the prophets of Baal just look silly and all this stuff. And so, I mean, Elijah, he just fit the bill. You know, when you thought about a powerful prophet of God, man, that was Elijah. But then the Lord begins to work in Elijah's life and say, hey, listen, man, your time is coming to an end. You've done the work that you can do. Now it's time to pass on to someone else. And so then this is where Elisha comes onto the scene. Elisha was very unassuming. He wasn't from a family of prophets. You know, he wasn't like his dad, and his dad's dad was a prophet or a priest or had gone to any kind of special training. I mean, Elisha was just, he was a farmer. He was a humble guy. And as we're going to find out through this series, we're going to find out that Elisha went on to do more recorded miracles than anyone outside of Jesus. Now, that's a pretty big deal, right? So he exceeded what his predecessor did and did way more. So the Bible records more miracles that are attributed to Elisha outside of Jesus himself. So Elisha was this prophet to Israel around the 5th century BC. And at this point, the children of Israel had been divided into two kingdoms. You had this northern kingdom of Israel and this southern kingdom of Judah. And Elisha was a prophet mostly to the northern kingdom, Israel. And with the children of Israel, with them divided, Baal worship was running rampant. Baal worship was just running rampant. I mean, there was just kind of a thing. And as you read through the book of 1 and 2 Kings, and of course, 1 and 2 Chronicles, you can just see the demise, really, their own demise, the children of Israel, as they build themselves into a series of events that obviously ultimately leads them into exile. And so this morning I want to turn your attention to 1 Kings chapter 19. 1 Kings chapter 19, as we look at the call of Elisha. I'm not going to have you stand because we're going to actually just kind of walk through this text one verse at a time. But 1 Kings 19, it recalls this call of Elisha. So Elijah, he's just called down this fire on this altar. He's made the prophets of Baal look terrible, look ridiculous. The King Ahab, who's the king of Israel, has married Jezebel, who's a Baal worshiper. I mean, there's all this stuff that is just going wrong. And so Elijah, he challenges them, and they call down, they wet the altar, says, hey, if you wet this altar and just soak it, I'm still going to call down fire from heaven. We're going to burn this thing up. And he does that, and then word gets back to Jezebel, and she says, I'm going to have your head. I'm going to kill you if I find you. Well, that kind of freaks Elijah out. He runs off. Of course, the Lord goes to him and says, Elijah, what's wrong? You know, and we get this sense of just, he's just overwhelmed and just burnt out of everything. And then that moves into a situation where God says, all right, there's three things I want you to do. One of them is, I need you to go find this guy named Elisha. I want you to make him your successor. So we pick up here in verse 19 of chapter 19. So Elijah went from there and found Elisha, son of Shaphat. He was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen, and he himself was driving the 12th pair. So we'll stop right there. So the Bible gives us this detail that Elijah goes and he finds Elisha plowing behind 12 oxen. So it gives us a detail that not only was Elisha just a farmer, but he was actually a well-to-do farmer. I mean, anybody who had 12 oxen, I mean, that's like if you went to a guy's field today and, you know, he's got like 5 John Deere's and all this stuff. And he's like, oh, I'm just a poor farmer. I'm like, poor farmer, I know how much those tractors cost. What are you talking about? You know? I don't know if that was Elisha or not, but we know he was a wealthy, he had a lot of means if he had this much oxen. And that's going to come into play here in a little bit when we figure out what he gives up to go and to follow him. So if you think about it, Elisha's life to this point, it's kind of monotonous, you know, kind of just ordinary. And if you think about it, he's kind of going through and doing the same thing each and every day. You wonder if he's behind these oxen, he's plowing this field. He's like, man, you know, one more day, just plowing this field. Same thing I did this time 5 years ago. And I feel like we have a lesson just right in there. You see, because at this point, I don't want to get funny here, but if you're behind 12 oxen, what is your view? Oxen rears. That's what your view is. And man, you think about, I was reading this and I'm trying to, you know, to wrap my mind around this. And I wonder what's going through his mind, because each and every day, all he knows is oxen rears. That's just all he knows. And I would imagine there's kind of a stench that kind of goes along with that. He just kind of feels like he's in a rut. No pun intended, because he's plowing rows. And it got me thinking, when it comes to us trying to figure out, Lord, what would you have us to do? What would you have me to do? What can I do that's going to require ridiculous faith? I wonder if we feel like that we're just doing the same thing each and every day. We all have our version of oxen rears that we just follow behind each and every day. You know, whether it's work, going to the same office each and every day, going to the same plant each and every day, getting the same truck each and every day, driving the same route each and every day. And you're sitting here thinking, Lord, how in the world are you going to use me? How in the world am I going to be able to step out in bold faith, because my life is just full of oxen rears? But there's something to be said here about Elisha. Because what you see in Elisha is that he was faithful in the ordinary and the mundane things. I think there's something to be said about even in the ordinary times, remaining faithful, even in the ordinary, even in the mundane things, you know, just sticking with it. And so then we come to the last part of verse 19. It says, Elijah went up to him and threw his cloak around him. Now, for those of us who are kind of unfamiliar with the biblical story, there's some things that happen that are just kind of like weird, right? You know, here's a guy, minds his own business. He's plowing, oxen rears, that's all he knows, you know, and just doing his thing. If he had an iPod, he'd probably have his iPod in his ears, you know. And he's just doing his thing, and all of a sudden, this random prophet of the Lord comes up and says, you know, put my coat over you here. It was probably a coat that had been a piece of fur or animal fur, and he throws it on Elisha, which simply sends the message, hey, that which covered me and my ministry is now going to be what now covers you. I think we have to be prepared. When we're trying to look for God to do something big, when we're trying to figure out, Lord, how can I live a life of bold faith? Man, even in the ordinary, even in the mundane, we have to be prepared, because you never know when the Lord's going to come across and present you with an opportunity to do something bold for him. That's what happened to Elisha. I mean, he didn't get a memo, he didn't get an email, he didn't get a text saying, hey, Elijah's heading your way, be ready. He was just doing his thing. And so verse 20 helps us see the first of two principles that I want you to see of Elisha's call. The first principle is this. You don't have to see the whole picture in order to obey immediately. It'll be probably the third or fourth screen down, Justin, on your notes. You don't have to see the full picture in order to obey immediately. Well, let's look at verse 20. What is Elisha's response? He's plowing, guy comes up, throws him a cloak over him. Look at verse 20. Elisha then left his oxen and ran after Elijah. "Let me kiss my father and mother goodbye," he said, "and then I will come with you." "Go back," Elijah replied. "What have I done to you?" I mean, look at that. Elisha, he didn't have to think about it. He actually didn't have to go, and this maybe sounds bad coming from a preacher, but I'm trying to prove a point. He didn't even have to go pray about it. I mean, he's doing his thing. He's faithful in the ordinary. All of a sudden, Elijah comes by, puts his coat on him. Apparently, Elisha knew what that meant. If you did that to me, I'd say, "Thanks for the coat," I think. And Elisha just immediately drops everything and says, "Oh, yeah, sounds good." Here's the thing. I think because Elisha was faithful in the ordinary, because even in the valley, even in kind of life just being the same old thing, I feel like Elisha was probably a man who was faithful to the Lord, who was prepared to hear the Lord speak. He was looking for opportunities to hear the Lord speak and to show him things, to show him how he could take a step of faith. And I feel like that when we're there with our mindset, when we're just ready, we're sitting on edge, we're ready for the Lord just to speak. And when the opportunity comes along, it's almost like it's just so clear as day that we don't have to pray about it because the Lord's kind of been preparing us for it in a way. And then that's what happens to Elijah. He just says, "Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely, I'm there." That kind of got me thinking about our church as an organization, just kind of a side sermon here. You know, as much as I like to do long-range planning, and you know, you look, it's good to cast vision and to have a vision statement and kind of figure out where you're going as a church. You know, here recently, you know, when I first got here, I felt like, we gotta sit down, we gotta plan it out. But here recently, my prayer has kind of been, Lord, just keep us fresh and open to follow whatever wind that you want to blow through our church. You know, I mean, it's good to, you obviously want to know where you're trying to go. But at the same time, I think the best thing that we can do is just to position ourselves to be ready to follow where the Lord wants to take our church. Amen. And so even in long range planning, I think a part of that is just saying, hey, listen, I feel like that these are the goals that the Lord wants us to be moving towards. But at the same time, hey, let's be ready for the Lord to come in and say, hey, I want to take this ship this way and follow it and roll with it. You know, the Bible is full of these one-word directions, really. Elisha, he didn't get much direction, did he? Elijah just showed up and threw his coat over him. And it really is it's follows in step with the other biblical ancestors that we talk about. I mean, Allah, Abraham, just go. You know, Abraham was just, hey, I want you to go here. And Lord's like, I'll figure out those details later. You know, whether or back up a little bit more. Noah, hey, Noah, just build this ark. It's going to rain. I'll explain the rest to you as we go. The call of the disciples. They're mending their nets. They're casting their net, they're fishing, and Jesus comes by and just says, hey, follow me. Just that one word. And I'm thinking in our lives, are we ready? Are we ready to be obedient even when we can't see the full picture? Because remember, that was our first principle. You don't have to be able to see the whole picture in order to obey immediately. Now, I know for some of you, your personality that goes against how the Lord designed you. And I get that. I mean, some of us are like, hey, I'm all about obeying the Lord, but if he could just come down and if he could just lay it out within a nice outline and not sloppy, a nice outline with indents and subpoints, I will happily follow the Lord. And you know, and they're like, nothing, that's just kind of how they're designed. But I hate to, you know, I hate to break it to some of those folks, but man, the Bible's full of times where the Lord didn't come out and send you the agenda ahead of time. It was, I need you to go. I need you to come. I need you to build. I need you to do that. I need you to follow me. Because the journey of the faith, the journey of faith is this journey of just walking with the Lord daily and trusting him that he's going to lead you where you need to go. So what's the one word that you're hearing from the Lord? Maybe you're in a position in your life where you're just hearing one word and you're scared to follow because, well, Lord, I'm just hearing one or two words. I can't get a clear picture on what you're trying to tell me. I got news for you. He's not going to give you the rest of the story until you commit with that one word. What is that word that you're hearing? Is it serve? Is it, hey, I want you to serve in youth ministry or in kids ministry or with Love, Serve, Give, or I want you to go down and volunteer here. For some of you, it may just be surrender. Maybe the only word that you're hearing is a surrender to the Lordship of Jesus Christ. Or it could be a surrender of your heart. Maybe you're here today and you've never accepted Christ as your Savior, but you just keep hearing this word surrender, and in your mind you're thinking, I don't know what that means. I don't know what it means to step out and just give my life to the Lord. And it's one of those things that you won't know what it means until you do it. You know, last week we were talking about getting that the head knowledge of God, the head knowledge of what we know about the Bible into our heart, and afterwards, Donnie came up to me and said, you know, the truth of the matter is, it won't really get into a heart until the Spirit awakens us to the need that it needs to be in our heart. And to some degree, if you're hearing the one word surrender, that's all you're going to hear until you make that step. Maybe you're hearing the words mission trip. Maybe someone's hearing the word adopt or foster or, I mean, that just some sort of bold step that the Lord has been speaking to you about. And I'm thinking, it's not going to be revealed to you all the way until you begin to take those steps. So verse 21 reveals to us another principle from Elijah's call. And it's this: the ones that God uses the most are the ones who hold on to the least. Think about that. The ones that God uses the most are the ones who hold on to the least. Now, this is a kind of a leadership principle that I've always lived by. The more you hold on to something, the more likely you are to lose it. And let me just chase this rabbit. What I mean is there are people that get involved in churches and they just want to hold on to power so much. There's a power structure in a church, and they feel like they're at the top of it, and they just want to hold on so much. They don't want to let anyone come in and do things because they've always done this, and they just want to hold on and hold on and hold on. And after years of holding on, they actually begin to lose their influence because they become known as someone who just doesn't want to do anything, that just wants to hold on to what they're in charge of. And so, in essence, they begin to lose influence. They begin to lose that, what I call social capital, you know. So that was free. That's just something else, okay. Verse 21, so Elijah left him and went back. He took his yoke of oxen and slaughtered them. He burned the plowing equipment, took to cook the meat, and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he set out to follow Elijah and became his servant. So a well-to-do farmer who his only life that he knows is his mom and his dad and their farm has made the decision to slaughter all his oxen, which, by the way, we could get more oxen if he wanted to go back. But then he uses the plow to light the barbecue, to cook the oxen. Turn to your neighbor and say, now that's ridiculous faith. He didn't do a plan B. He didn't do a plan B or anything. And so the question that I have for us, man, who's ready to follow like that? Burns all that he knows. So the question for us is, what plows do we have to burn? What plows in your life do you have to burn? It could be that, because again, that's that one thing that's holding you back. That's that one thing that you kind of follow the Lord, so you'll kind of slaughter the oxen, but you know, well, we can always get more oxen. They reproduce and we can always get more. It's all good. But man, when you burn the plow, I mean, you're serious. Because then you got to go figure that out, how to get another one. And in that day and age, that's probably was a big, you can't go down the tractor supply and get another one. So Elisha was making a definite decision. So what plows do you have to burn? If the Lord is wanting to lead you into a story of ridiculous faith, what's the plow that he's asking you to burn? You know, for the disciples, there in Mark 2 and then Luke 5, the call of the disciples, I love the image of Jesus says, follow me, and they drop their nets. These fishermen, that's all they know. That's all they know how to do is fish. They drop their nets and they just go. And so the metaphor is the same. What net do you need to drop in order to follow him? What plow do you need to burn? Reminds me a couple years ago, actually, I guess 8 or 9 years ago, Casey and I were praying through kind of what this call to ministry meant. I was wrapping up a master's degree in pastoral ministry from Northwest Nazarene University. Shout out to my Idaho folks who know where that's at. And was wrapping that up and was kind of doing a part-time youth pastor gig at West Columbia Central. Was working at a hospital in cubicles. Talk about oxen rears, sit in a cubicle. That's for me. I'm not bad mouthing that. I'm just saying for me. And I was like, Lord, what would you have me to do, Lord? What is out there for us? I know that you're calling me more than just kind of doing this part time thing. And through a series of events, I got connected with a pastor in Oklahoma, and we talked, and I sent him my resume, and man, he was just seemed very interested. He said, man, I think you guys would be a good fit. I'd love to fly you guys out here to Sepulpa, Oklahoma. And you know, I'm a South Carolinian. I don't know squat about Oklahoma, but at the time it seemed like, hey, this is something we should explore. And we got to a point where we're like, well, you know, Casey and I both were like, I don't know. And so we kind of left for work that day thinking, I'm going to call the guy and just say, you know, we're good. We both went to work. We both came back. And we got home that night, and this is before you had kids, so you could actually, you know, have a conversation. And parents, you know what I'm talking about. She got back, she goes, you know what? I've been thinking about the Oklahoma thing. I was like, really? I have two. She goes, I think you need to call him and tell him we're game. It's like, okay. I said, this guy is really serious. I mean, he's pretty much offered me the job. I just got to come and interview with the board, and I mean, I think it'll be good. She's like, yeah. She's like, I feel like if you're called to ministry, then we're all in. Like, okay. So I called him and said, hey, man, I'd love to come out. And then it kind of got weird. The pastor didn't email me back like he had been immediately. And I'm thinking, you know, hey, this guy was ready to fly me like yesterday. And so Come to find out, somebody in the church, they knew somebody else who was looking to be a youth pastor who's from the area, and they just kind of went that direction. And he called me and said, "Hey, man, I'm sorry. I kind of may have jumped the gun on you. We're kind of going in a different direction." I was like, "Well, that's fine." So, I mean, we didn't go to Oklahoma, but man, in our heart of hearts, like we had made the decision. We burned the plow. We had burned the South Carolina plow and was like, "You know what? We're going." And I looked back at that situation, and I feel like that it was just that moment that God wanted to. I don't think God was wanting us to go to Oklahoma at that time, but I think he was just like, "Let's just use this experience. I want to see if they'll burn the plow." You know, I want to, you know, let's. And I look back at that, and that really was a kind of a monumental moment for us that said, "And Lord, we'll go anywhere," because we'd made a decision to do that. And of course, 6-7 months later, you know, I started the process of coming here. So Camden's a lot better than Oklahoma, but and I'm not. It didn't always work out that way. Sometimes when you burn the plow, it's going to happen. All right. So I don't want people thinking, "Well, I'll just burn the plow and it won't work out," you know, "and I can feel good about myself." No. That's honestly, I wish, you know, if it had happened, then we were ready to go. But it reminds me that, you know, ridiculous faith, it begins with full surrender. Ridiculous faith begins with full surrender. Stepping forward to God's plans, stepping forward to where God is leading means stepping away from your security. So as we wrap it up, I want you to think about that. What in your life is secure? What in your life is the plow that needs to be burned? Because if you feel like the Lord is wanting to lead you into a story of ridiculous faith, I'm here to tell you that it begins with a full surrender. And the truth is, I don't know if we're meant to play it safe. I don't know if we're, as believers, we're meant to always play it safe. I don't know if we're meant to just to live into the mundane. Man, to be prepared for the Lord to come by, to throw his coat over you and say, "It's time." And I think in those moments, I have to be ready to be gracefully broken so that we can fully surrender to him. And so today, what's that one word that God's talking to you about? Is it surrender? Have you made the decision to follow Christ, but you're still holding on to some things? Maybe that one word is surrender. Maybe the prayer that God's wanting you to pray, maybe the plow that he's wanting you to burn is this plow of pride, this plow of giving all of your heart, laying it all on the altar of the Lord. It could be something more tangible. It could be a ministry that you can see, that you can touch, that the Lord's saying, "Hey, why don't you serve in this area?" It may be getting involved in people's lives in a way that you never have, or with folks that you've never really worked with that need help. Whatever the Lord has for you, whatever he's speaking to you about, I pray that you'll come to a point of being gracefully broken. I want to invite you to stand, and we're going to sing this song as we close. And altars are always open in our church. If you feel like that something has been said that you want to respond to, you're welcome to come pray. You just indicate to me and myself or one of the other pastors will come, and we'll pray with you. If you want to come pray by yourself, that's fine too. But let's sing this last song, "Gracefully Broken." We sang it during offering, and we sang it beautifully. It filled the sanctuary, and I think it's just the best way to end this time. Let's sing.
Thank you for visiting CamdenFirstChurch.org.